closed session and has addressed a number of issues but has taken no action. So we will reconvene the meeting of the regular board meeting for the Huntington Beach Union High School District Board of Trustees. And I'd like to begin by asking for the last time for our student board rep, Kaya Collada, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you very much. Our first item of business is the approval of the minutes of the regular board meeting held May 13, 2025. This is item 3A. I have a motion made by Dr. Dishnow, seconded by Trustee Hernandez. Any questions or comments? Corrections? Hearing none, please vote. 5 ayes. Thank you. Next item on the agenda, 3B, are board committee reports and activities. And I'll start to my right with Trustee Hernandez.
We have a very long meeting, so just two things I wanted to highlight. Dr. Dishnow and I attended the DeMille Language Academy 10-year anniversary a couple weeks ago. So as folks may know, our Vietnamese dual immersion program just started this year. And so the original elementary school that started that program with the students was recognizing it. And so it's a really good program, had a lot of really excellent highlights and community members go. But one thing I wanted to note is that we will be celebrating our first graduating class and making history in California in just another 3 years. And then secondly, I did do a site visit to the Huntington Beach Adult School, visiting the students in the pharmacy tech program, working on their compounding pharmacy skills, and then also visiting their medical assistant program. So it was really helpful to take a look at some of these classroom visits this past month.
Thank you. Trustee Dishnow?
Thank you. The first thing I'd like to report on is a meeting I had with Dr. Murray, Dr. Lopez, principal of Fountain Valley High School, and Jim Perry, our athletic director, regarding my concerns about re-leaguing and how it impacts the Sunset League. And I won't go into a lot of detail except to say I think we're in very good hands with Dr. Perry at the helm as our representative for the CIF. And while I continue to have concerns about re-leaguing by the CIF and its impact on what I perceive as the community identity of the Sunset League, I know that they have our best interests and they will protect them as best they can. So I just would ask our administration to ensure that the board continues to receive regular inputs on CIF and what's happening and what changes they might be making that might impact our students and our students. And then secondly, today I had an opportunity to participate in a CSBA interactive webinar that was designed specifically for board members to take a look at essential aspects of artificial intelligence and how that relates to policy in education. It was a joint presentation by CSBA, by CITE, that I wasn't familiar with. CITE stands for California IT and Education, and the San Ramon Valley Unified School District. Their emphasis was essentially, before we can use AI effectively, we need to understand it. And I think that's especially true for board members, since we'll be dealing with policy issues. The webinar itself was very basic, but there was a very deep dive into why we, as board members, need to fully comprehend the implications of artificial intelligence, and the opportunities and the challenges that will come with integrating AI into our curriculum and in our high schools. There was an excellent discussion about the fundamentals of AI and its application within schools. And at least critical for me, they talked about the key components of related board policies, which I assume we're going to be dealing with in the not-too-distant future. including classroom use, but also the procurement processes that we use, which I hadn't really thought about. They talked about reviewing the terms of service for vendors that we contract with and asking critical questions like whether or not those are with both state and federal laws regarding privacy issues for students, and does that vendor collect data, and if the data used, who owns that data, is the data being mined, is it being sold, is it being shared, and if so, with whom? So I think there are some issues that this board and all boards are going to need to grapple with. CSBA shared 4 new policies that will be coming out to districts soon. I don't believe we've seen them yet, but they include responsible use agreements for both employees and students, academic honesty, homework, makeup work, and student assessment. So at least for me, I gained a much better, I think, a better understanding of why more professional development is going to be critical in this district, and not just for our teachers, but for parents as well. I think it's going to be, I want to make sure parents aren't the piece that gets left out of understanding how artificial intelligence works in our school, how we're using it, and how it's impacting our students. So I was very impressed with it, and I would recommend it.
Trustee Carey.
Oh, thank you. First of all, I wanted to just say that I was really sad to miss the certificated banquet, but I had a family high school graduation, and that took precedence. Along with that, I did want to mention that we've been to so many just really, really positive events, and so I just want to give a shout out to teachers and our classified staff who've organized everything just so well, so that our kids, individually our students, are really getting recognized in such a positive manner. And just to give you an example of the high school graduation that I went to, and I'm not going to say the name, it's not around here, I will say that. Well, we got there at 5. It started at 6, and we didn't get out until after 10:30. And yeah, so that was really something. So anyway, I was going to send my thoughts to the principal up there to let her know how it's really done, how we do it here. So, but I decided not to do that because I do have a younger one coming up, so we don't want to, you know, ruin anything for him. Just a couple of events, you know, aside from everything being positive. And for me, the AVID recognition that Westminster High School received was just absolutely wonderful. I mean, I just think when that program started, and, you know, they have come so far, and it's just so wonderful, and it's really a testament to all of our teachers and all of our staff. The administrative staff and everyone. That was really, really something. And then the other thing I did want to mention, too, was, you know, I did exit interviews at several of the schools. And I've been doing exit interviews at Westminster High School since they started exit interviews at Westminster High School. And I was so blown away this year. It was really amazing. Every student showed up in a suit and a tie or an appropriate nice dress for the staff part of it, and shook my hand, looked me in the eye, were so prepared and explained what they were doing. And I got to tell you, that is just, again, testament to how far our staff and how much, you know, we're centered, so student-centered. It was really, really wonderful. And with that,
thank you to Trustee Carey, Trustee Castry.
Thank you very much. Like all of us, it's been a very busy time. I'll just highlight that I went to the Unified Prom this year. It was great fun. To see all the kids out there dancing and just having a good time. And students were there from at least six of our schools. I think one of our schools is not represented this year, but I suspect they will be. It's great. We've really developed that unified program across the district, so that's positive. And otherwise, I went to the Macy Awards and was delighted that both Fountain Valley High School was recognized and also the Academy for the Performing Arts. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you very much. For my report, I happy and not so happy. So typically, at this time of the year, as we have heard, and I felt very badly asking for them to limit their comments because this is our busiest month of the year. We are all over the place, and so to pick just two items is very difficult. So the happy one that I would like to pick is because I have been unable to attend the Volunteer in Public Schools celebration that we do every year for the past many years because I sit on the board of directors for the California School Boards Association. They delayed that weekend. So I was able to attend Volunteer in Public Schools. It was an excellent morning. It's changed a lot since I was there last. I felt much more festive due to inflation. That big check just keeps getting bigger for the equating of hours to dollars. So a real celebration of our volunteers in public schools. The other item, I was able to attend with Mr. Starr, just the two of us here from the district, was Capital Advisors Budget Perspectives Workshop at the county. That was more of the low point. So Mr. Starr will be sharing more budget news with us later in the meeting, but it was certainly not as fun as the VIPS breakfast, I can certainly say that. So thank you for your reports and activities. We'll move to the next item. Which is our student board representative. This is the last meeting that we have our wonderful student representative to the board from Ocean View High School, Kaya Pilato, and she will present her last report on campus activity.
Thank you, President Henry. Over at Fountain Valley High School, Fountain Valley implemented their first ever senior assembly, where full school and staff were able to say goodbye and good luck to all of their graduating seniors. ASB hosted the assembly where seniors got to perform and also were recognized for some of their major accomplishments throughout the school year. It was a very heartful full school assembly and their last one of the year. Over at Edison completed their third and final cycle of inquiry for their instructional focus. Link's exit ceremony was on Monday with 24 students leaving Edison's adult program and are on to the next chapter of their lives. Over at Marina softball finished their impressive postseason and secured the CIF Division 3A championship. The last time this had happened was in 1995 with the same head coach, Kelly Luff. Marina hosted their annual Larry Doyle Athletic Hall of Fame ceremony, honoring their elite group of Viking athletes. They also hosted their Distinguished Viking Senior Honors Night, where students received a variety of honors from their academic performances this year. Over at Huntington, yesterday, HBHS Link Crew hosted their Cookies and Cram Spring Exam Study event, which included subject-specific tutoring, emotional support dogs, and study snacks. HB finished their year strong for students with Tower Awards, Distinguished Oiler Ceremony, Athletic Awards, and APA Awards. Over at Ocean View, we had our huge five-star blowout where all of our students got to use their points if collected throughout the year for participating in school spirit and activities. Yet again, our five-star blowout was a huge success. We raffled off prizes such as Legos, gift cards, and three TVs. All month long, we have been celebrating our seniors and their next journeys. They had our senior signing day where our seniors got to share where they were going and their next steps. They had our senior awards night. And yesterday, our seniors' last day was ended with our annual senior swim. All seniors were invited out to the pool to hang out, swim, and enjoy some burgers and soak in the last moments of high school. Over at Westminster, senior activities have been in full swing at West since last week with an exciting volleyball match between the staff and the seniors, where seniors took the win in a lunchtime game. Yesterday, however, the seniors had one last lesson from the staff on the softball field in their staff versus senior softball game with a score of 16-7 in favor of the staff. And congratulations to all the graduating seniors and all of the students and staff across the HBUHSD for another great school year. over at Valley Vista. It was a full house at the Valley Vista Golden Eagle Scholarship Awards night. They were honored to have President Henry preside over the event. Over 25 students and 4 teachers are celebrating grad night at Universal Studios tonight. And then I just wanted to give one last thank you to the board and everyone within the district for such an amazing year and everyone being so kind. And I want to thank you for all the things that you do for our schools, and we really are appreciative. And I'm so glad I got to meet the student representative this year.
Well, on behalf of the board, we want to thank you for being an amazing student representative and bringing us the news across the district at each of our meetings. I don't think you missed a single one, so we're very pleased with the year that we spent with you. Kaya will be attending Pacific Lutheran University in state, so we wish her well, and we have a gift for you. Do you want to carry that over? Well, but I also want to ask Benjamin Simons to come forward. And is your mom here too, Judy? I'm sorry. Just you. Okay. And so this is our second year of presenting the Michael Simons Student Representative Scholarship. And Ben, I'm going to pass this to you so you can make the presentation. We wondered if you might have a few words to say, and I said, probably.
You're not done just yet. She thought she was going to get away. You want to introduce your parents to everybody? And Myra didn't want to embarrass Kaya, but we're going to do some photos too, so if you guys can come on up.
Thank you again for all of the hard work, and as we have said at many meetings, you are welcome to stay, but we understand if you want to go and have a celebratory dinner with your family, you are excused. All right.
All right, we will move next to public communication to the board. The agenda provides members of the public the opportunity to address the board regarding agenda items before or during the board's consideration of the item. The agenda also provides members of the public an opportunity to address the board at regular meetings on matters which are not on the agenda, but which are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. The board may not take any action or discuss any item not appearing on the posted agenda and cannot immediately respond to public comments. Anyone desiring to address the board should have filled out the yellow card provided at the entrance to the boardroom and submitted it to the board secretary prior to the start of the meeting. If your topic relates to a particular item agenda, you have the option of requesting to be called upon to make your remarks at the time the item is discussed by the board. 3 minutes will be allotted to each person at the time he or she speaks. If more than three people request to speak to an issue, the number of speakers will be limited to the first 10 who submit their request to the board secretary at the board meeting for a maximum of 30 minutes. It is requested that questions or remarks be addressed to the board from the podium. The Huntington Beach Union High School District seeks to promote mutual respect, civility, and orderly conduct among district employees, parents, and the public. This policy is not intended to deprive any person of his or her right to freedom of expression, but only to maintain, to the extent possible and reasonable, a safe, harassment-free workplace for our students and staff. This evening, we do have 9 speakers from Fountain Valley, but I'm going to waive the reduction and allow 3 minutes for each. As a point of personal privilege. So our first speaker is Lizzie Doan.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for letting me share tonight. My name is Lizzie Doan. I am a senior at Fountain Valley High School and the founder of the State FBHS Theater Petition, which has garnered almost 3,000 signatures to date. I've been a part of the Fountain Valley High School theater program for my entire 4 years of high school. I'm here today as a student and representative of this program because I found out last week that our district has decided to remove our teacher and theater program from our school. Although I'm graduating tomorrow, I'm here today because I believe in this program and the positive impact it had on many students' lives, both past and present. I want to protect this program and find ways to ensure it can continue for both current and future students in the Santa Valley community. As I stand before you today, I would like to consider some things as we decide or eliminate this course from our school. First, all competitive and nationally ranked high schools in Huntington Beach Union High School District offer theater programs. Westminster, Huntington Beach, Farina, Edison, and Ocean View all provide at least one theater course. Why would the most academically prestigious school in the district remove this course option? Fountain Valley High ranks highest in test scores among the district schools. It's ranked 9 out of 10 on great schools and works hard to provide equitable programs for all students. Secondly, how will you continue to provide a theater program for current students and future students? Will students who have an interest in theater and desire to receive arts credits need to transfer out of Fountain Valley High School? The Huntington Beach Academy of the Performing Arts is not an option for most students who have working parents and may not have transportation to this campus. For the ongoing success of this theater department, we have a few basic needs that we would like all of you to consider. First, providing arts credits. These credits are a crucial prerequisite for a thriving theater department since it's required for everyone to have an arts credit. Second, we also need to find ways to recognize the accomplishments of our theater students. As many of you know, FHS has an award system at the end of the year, and the Coronet Awards are considered the highest honor students can receive. We would really love to see this category recognized in the Coronets in the future, just like every other arts program in the school. My recommendation for your consideration is to keep our 7th period class, but organize it in a way that resembles a sports team. Like dance and other sports teams, we hire coaches and mentors, not teachers, to hone their craft. If we did this for theater, not only will we be able to retain the credits received, but also avoid interrupting the budgeting processes that is needed to hire a teacher. I would like Shannon Kane, who has been a choreographer for us, or Mr. Zick, our longtime theater teacher, be considered for the position of theater mentor. You have a lot to consider as you balance the students' needs, desires, and funding. Please reconsider your decision to cut the theater class at Fountain Valley High School. Thank you all for your time again.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Daniel Henry.
Hello.
Yeah, you can sit if you would be more comfortable. You need the microphone.
That's new technology.
it's often thought that acting is fake, a mere imitation of human emotion made to fool the audience. That it's all a sham. Many believe that words within a script and rules within a play are us impersonating people we are not, and emotions we do not have. This is all far. But so be it. Let's get rid of the script. Let's get rid of the costumes. Let's pull back the curtains and dive backstage and see each and every one of us for who we are, our insecurities, our fears, and our imperfections. My name is Daniel Henry, a sophomore within the FBHS theater program, and I've struggled with a severe speech impediment in my entire life. Just like my father before me.
Sorry, Dad, I do not mean to call you out like that.
I have taken speech therapy a part of my regular, simple schedule my entire life. And so with that, in the constant bullying I had to endure, nothing is worse than getting shoved back down a hole I had already dug myself to hide in. Out of shame of something that wasn't even my fault. But it was only when I had entered my freshman year of high school, and when I joined theater, that theater showed me the spotlight. It wasn't a cry for attention. The spotlight is the unconditional love every person should be given, broadcast to the world and to themselves, who they are and who they are proud to be. And it was only then that after learning that gift of being proud of myself, I was able to go through my sophomore year of high school for the first time without taking speech therapy. When you are raised without a voice, you forget how to use it. Just shout to the world who you are and what you need. And with budget cuts over $49 million being taken from California's speech therapy programs all over the state, our voices are quieter than ever. And the availability of a seventh period theater is crucial to providing sanctuary and comfort for an underrepresented and unfortunate population of people with speech impediments who are not given the tools to find themselves. The reason I did not ask for a theater club is due to the fact that the credits are not provided, and which is one of the initial reasons why people join theater. But it is always when people go to find something for treasure, for materialistic value, that they find themselves.
Thank you. Next speaker is Kendall Hester.
Theater at FBHS has given me a reason to live and a purpose. This program at FBHS gives me something to look forward to when I wake up in the morning. I have been able to get through depressive episodes, self-harming, and suicidal ideology, which at a time nearly led to suicide. The fourth period and seventh period production class has given me hope that I will not need a permanent solution to a temporary problem. I, along with many other students, have been welcomed and provided a loving community of people who let me know I am needed and accepted somewhere. Along with a loving environment, FBHS Theater has given me a sense of peace. Mr. Zick has shown patience and enthusiasm, and that has allowed me to have a sense of peace in the program. It has allowed me to thrive as not only an actress, but as a person. Stepping into room 309 gives me peace and escapism, making me forget about any suicidal ideology and planning that I've done throughout the day. The theater program has reminded me that suicide is not the answer to things, and that there is a future to live for. I have a purpose in life, and a desire for a future in theater education to provide the new youth of America what I was given. I am not the only one who gets a zest for life from this program, and I am very fortunate to have the knowledge that I have a reason to live.
Thank you.
That's it.
Our next speaker is Haley Hoselick. Hope I got that right.
everyone. My name is Haley Hoslick. I'm here today as a proud graduate of Fountain Valley High School and an even more prouder alumni from its theater program. Because of this program, I've been able to grow into a leader, a teacher, someone who creates a safe and welcoming learning environment for not just our local community, but across the world. I joined theater my freshman year, not knowing that this small program would reshape my life. That little black box became my second home. Every single day of high school, I ate lunch there. I waited in the mornings before class, laughed and cried, rehearsed, and I grew up in that school. I started high school, I was very anxious. I was on medication, but I was inside the theater room. People saw me, heard me, and accepted me for exactly that. I was able to find my voice. When I started, I was just in the ensemble, a few lines here and there, but by my senior year, I had earned lead roles, I had mentored upperclassmen, and even learned how to juggle multiple responsibilities at once. I became a leader on stage and off, that growth was only possible because of the opportunities and support this program gave me. Theater didn't just teach me how to act, it taught me how to communicate, how to listen, how to work with people from different walks of life. It gave me the confidence to get our school's baccalaureate program. I was chosen to complete the work. Now I teach in real classrooms. After I graduated in 2022, I earned an internship abroad in history, where I taught in English and Spanish students of all ages, create lesson plans, lead activities, and I stand in front of classrooms, confident, capable, and prepared, all because of what I learned in my high school theater program. This program prepared me for real life, real jobs, for a successful future that I'm living now. While this program is small does not mean insignificant. It means personal, and it means powerful. It means every student who walks that door is seen, is heard, and supported in a way that they would nowhere else. I don't know what I would have done if it wasn't for Fountain Valley Theater. I don't know what I would have become. I don't think I would have the courage to teach it all, or to go abroad, or the strength to become a teacher at all. But I do know is that this is my life. Please, don't take that chance away. I'm just a student who needs it next.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Dulce Rabano. I hope I got that right.
Good evening, Huntington Beach Union High School District Board. My name is Dulce Rabano, and while I am actually a graduating senior from Ocean View High School, I have had the privilege to have been a part of FVHS Theater for all 4 years of my high school career. As you have heard tonight, this program has genuinely changed the lives of its students. We've all had life-changing experiences, forged lasting friendships, and have been able to cultivate the necessary life skills of public speaking, critical thinking, empathy, and teamwork. As the students of the FVHS Theater Program, we would like to ask the HBU-HSD Board to show their direct support for FVHS Theater. We ask that our program not be cut entirely from FVH's schedule and to keep our program as a seventh period class with strong student leadership, that students still may receive VPA credit, which is required for some colleges and universities. We ask that in future school years, with enough support from the district, Fountain Valley High School, and with enough student interest, our program be reinstated as an in-school class. If FVHS Theater were to only continue as a club without district or school support, it runs the risk of being forgotten and disregarded, as what has happened with a few programs at Ocean View that have been reduced to clubs. We understand that this issue is caused by things outside of our control. However, cutting programs such as FVHS Theater will not solve any problems. It will only create more. If FVHS lacks a theater program, middle school students who enjoy theater and performing living in the Fountain Valley area and beyond could end up choosing another high school or another district entirely to attend, which would worsen our district-wide issue of low enrollment. To recap, We ask that the district show direct support for FVHS theater and continue it as a seventh period class with strong student leadership. Supporting FVHS theater doesn't just mean you're supporting the arts. It would mean you are supporting your community, your children, the future of this country's creative industries, and you will be providing students with brighter futures filled with more opportunities, not fewer. Please consider everything that you have heard tonight regarding FVHS theater. Students of FVHS theater, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Adoria McGlashan.
My name is Adoria, and I'm a former Baron and theater kid. And I'm here to tell you that removing theater will not be the simple budget cut you may think it to be. It can be dangerous. I did not grow up in a conventional home. Both of my parents struggled with addiction, and my mother battled with mental illness. I was raised by my grandmother, who was desperate to keep me from falling down the same path. One of the best decisions she made was enrolling me in theater. It was a safe environment where I could escape to. It also kept me engaged and off the streets. But beyond that, it gave me essential life skills: how to speak in public, think on my feet, work with others, and express myself clearly. I have landed so many jobs as a young adult that I was not qualified for. Simply because I learned how to communicate, adapt, and lead. All things I learned on stage from Mr. Zick. More than that, theater gave me a space to belong to, a place where it was okay to be different and safe to be me. Theater is so much more for me than just an extracurricular. And for students like me, who don't come from stability, this kind of space isn't just extra, it is essential. Taking away theater classes risks far more than just test scores in college applications. It jeopardizes their mental health, as we've heard, their sense of identity, and their future. And you may think, as a former theater kid, I'm just being dramatic. But the truth is, without theater, I don't know where I would be right now. And because I had that chance, I don't have to imagine. Please, I urge you, with all of the stories that you've heard today, please do not take away that chance from the next kid who's like me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Zoe Rios.
Former theater baron, being an active participant in Fountain Valley High School theater program set me up to success in college. Specifically, my general education was versus memorizing lines, helped me study for finals, analyzing and dissecting characters and plays, helped me critically. My college classes, which helped me pass, being curious to know more, which helped me stick in my memory. Being a part of and working with the cast showed me and helped me in group projects, presentations. Committing to putting on a show helped me keep my classes and school commitments in college, maintaining an average 3.5 GPA. Stepping on stage in front of an audience helped me become a healthy public speaker. Take all the academic success and you look at who I am, and it directly comes from how I was shaped as a peer in performing. Mr. Zick was the first person to talk to me like a person, not just a student, shape me into a well-rounded individual, whether he deserves this or not. He took a small moment helped me with a monologue, and for the first time, what I now know to be true, this was true acceptance. Once I got on that stage and performed something I spent time on, was dedicated to, and he proud of. That moment, which probably lasted less than an hour, let's say 30-45 minutes, that moment, that sent me off to college where I was mentored by professors, trained at Juilliard. I have won awards, and been given opportunities to challenge myself in ways that are exciting because they help me blossom into someone who can step into any room, know exactly who I am, and that I belong in any and every space. Getting curious and being open-minded to being wrong, wanting to be challenged to do better, gave many people into jobs and careers that they become successful in. away theater classes and taking away opportunities for students to see examples, what shapes communities everywhere. It is taking away their opportunity to know they can experience the hardships of life, experience the joy as well. They can be serious and they can laugh. Practice the skill of being present and moving forward towards growth. This isn't just about theater and taking away the classes that have shaped generations. It's about taking away the opportunity to grow, express themselves, to question what they know and think, thrive in the ever-changing world and how they get to impact it for different types. High school theater and their teams are shaping the needs to go on and be successful after they graduate. Being inspiration is a beacon of hope. High school theater and its teachers give students hope that they can achieve. Students can look forward to a future where they get to have a hand in being a part of something. Wherever they go on, continuing to strip hope away isn't saving anything, but creating more harm than this. I hope you consider these next steps carefully.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Jeff Marbot.
Hello, I'm Jeff Marbot, and I'm an FBHS alumni and an FBHS parent. I'm a Fountain Valley Public School teacher. My wife is an FAHS alumni and a Fountain Valley Public School teacher as well. We're homeowners and taxpayers and voters in this community. We've invested in this community and we're invested in the lives of young people in this community. Over a week ago, I sent an email regarding FAHS theater to this school board and its superintendent and to Principal Paul Lopez. I've gotten no response. So I'm here tonight to ask some questions. I've heard through the grapevine that maybe after an after-school theater program might happen at FBHS next school year, and while that's infinitely preferable to your initial plan to axe the program completely, it leaves many questions unanswered. I have no doubt that declining enrollment is a real thing. I have no doubt that limited funding forces you to make choices you otherwise might not like to make. But history doesn't judge us on what we would have done in ideal circumstances. History judges us based on what we do with what we're given. It judges us for such a time as this. Scarcity reveals values. Budgets reveal priorities. There are certain things that every high school should have: academics, athletics, libraries, music. Theater is one of those basic things. Theater kids are your students, just as much as football players and cheerleaders and ASB presidents. Theater is every bit as formational and educational as any other program in your school district. My daughters have learned crucial, future-shaping lessons from FEHS theater, far more than they've learned in any AP class or in any pep rally. Theater is educational, and it deserves to be a class, not just a club. So my questions are students your number one priority? All students? Were no other cuts available to be made? Didn't the voters of the state of California mandate you to protect arts by passing Proposition 28? Where's that money going? And why does somebody else's kid deserve it more than mine? If my middle school of 600 students in a district with far less funding than yours can fund a teacher to teach a period of theater, how can a school of 3,000 students not possibly afford one period of theater? In the absence of answers from you, a narrative emerges organically in our minds. It's not a kind or a sympathetic narrative. Please prove these narratives false. Please demonstrate you care and you have concern for your students by taking action tonight. You know you can. We know you can. Please don't let us down.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Michael Kanyas.
Members of the board, hello. My name is is Michael Kanyas, and I'm speaking on behalf of the removal of fourth and seventh period from Fountain Valley High School. I am also a former Baron and a former alumni. The thing I want to start off with is I do understand where this is coming from, because I know that you have to listen to other people who are higher than you, and things come down the chain of command. I work at a regional theater where I work in middle management, and there are often decisions that are passed down to me that I don't quite understand, but I know that they're for the greater good of budget, the greater good of the theater. That being said, I also know that my boss is one of my very best friends, and one of my very, very best friends who I also met in theater, and I only would have been able to do that had I gone to FEHS theater. I have learned a lot about the value of the family unit, and I've learned a lot about handling responsibility, and these are values that, quite honestly, I do not find in common core curriculum other than that of theater. I'm not saying that it can't come from sports. I'm certainly not saying that it can't come from things like the sciences, math, language arts. These are just values that I was very, very lucky to find with the path that was given to me by enrolling in theater classes. I also know that as of right now, the petition is currently at, I think, 2,951 students, which is about the same number as the student body at FEHS currently as it stands, which leads me to believe that there would be more interest in theater in the future for future students who I probably won't even be able to meet. I know that this isn't unprecedented. This is similar to classes that my parents talked about that are no longer here, like Woodshop, Driver's Ed. I know that sometimes that it's just the passage of time. However, I personally think it would be a very silent and painful loss for these young kids who don't have the option available to them at this time. So I would genuinely ask, please don't remove the fourth and seventh period classes, just because for these young kids to not have that option available in high school where it often matters most, I just think would be a loss that they would come to regret, and high school should be about hope. Thank you for your time.
Our next speaker is Brianna Teal.
Hello, my name is Brianna Teal, and I'm a science teacher at Westminster High School. I'm here on behalf of our excellence task force at Westminster because we are looking to apply for the Golden Bell Award given by CSBA. Our application is going to be in the Career and Technical Education Department category for our agriculture CTE program and our Giving Farm. Since its inception in 1973, it has evolved from just giving urban students the chance to see farming practices to what it is now, where it's cross-curricular, culinary, arts, different sciences, agriculture. Our unified classes, all of them are engaged on our farm as it stands. We also work with lots of community partners to donate food to people in need via our Giving Farm. I think we just donated our millionth pound of food. We also give a lot of volunteer hours, and we encourage a lot of community involvement on our campus as well. I have some documents for you that I'll leave for the board. It's just the judging criteria, our application draft, and then also just what we would need from you for approval. I think something that's required for the application. That's it.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Kelly Corona.
some background, I was formerly one of your ROP career specialists in Ocean City High School. I was laid off in 2020. I just passed probation with my 6-month evaluation last Thursday, only to hear the next day the district considering eliminating the job again. I think it goes without saying. And I'm here to ask, consider alternatives to keep us and our families whole, which is sunsetting, I bet, gradually. So it's half inevitably naturally retire, leave the district, or guest retention can be replaced with a center that does build a culture model, your goal over time in a way that doesn't dramatically disrupt not only our lives, but the lives and success of our students, affected by a flurry of changes, new staff, and lawsuits. Decision would, of course, have impacts across all classified staff, who would be shifted in and out of new roles and encountering consequences of layoffs. I don't see this abrupt transition as something that would serve me alive. I applied for this position in this district with intention, as I saw the incredible positive impact the role of college and career specialists, society specialists at Ocean View High School had on our students. I see the same enthusiasm, knowledge, strong relationships, and your care for students and the guidance team I have the pleasure of working in Mountain Valley. I'm here to ask that you consider the real painful effects layoffs would have on all of us, and have had on me, layoffs have effectuated in the past. And I ask that you please keep yourself open to fair and considered alternative solutions that maintain our dignity and employment and service to this community. I'll close by asking anyone who is in here today from guidance, support as certificated staff, or in support of teachers, to raise your hand so the board can take account of some of the faces, both whose lives, whose families' lives, and mass layoffs. Please, for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Michael Tarasio.
First of all, I want to say real men in the barrels, I think they call themselves that. Putting yourself back out there, that young, extremely brave, so fantastic for them. From a pedagogical standpoint, I'm a guidance specialist. I have a master's at programs like that. Whether it will take a spot of an AP class, but their grades are going to be higher in all their other classes, which is that one. Now, on the lower side of that, if it's a lower end, also have a reason to come. You've heard that from them, give them this ability. Really important, though, is the classes are outside the school academic. So I'm a guidance specialist, an elementary teacher, being middle school, a special needs teacher. I'm a guidance specialist here for 5 years. We got the news that our position was pretty much redundant. I'm not mad about that, but apparently replacing that's a good plan. That is the plan. Every single district around here. Okay, Aries, there is no place for a guidance specialist. Only counts our names are on that list right there. Base level. There's basic software, the whole world uses it. I use it in Australia. Counselor, quack like ducks, just on the duck. So we got a message this Friday to say the meeting, so we haven't had much time to prepare for that. A bit of history on the role. Just generally, we're paid two levels less than irrigation specialist. The description is pretty much to keep the plants alive in the school. Not mad about that, they deserve their pay. If you're looking at a value, what you're ascribing as a district, the class, the 20% of guidance specialists getting your kids deserve colleges. Okay? What I want is to transfer. A very basic, obvious thing to keep the current staff, the years, all the relationships with the parents, teachers, self, admin, and else. That is the college. You can't buy institutional knowledge. It doesn't come from a college. It comes from years of experience. To be here, I've noticed trouble, I won't use that word actually, but a really close-knit community. Someone else just said, alumni, alumni, alumni. Have you meet in this district is alumni. And to bring in what complete new load of counselors, you've lost that. You're not going to get them from the local community. Like, this isn't going to happen. You can't find what Dean Larson's great is for. I'll get the experience at local. They're going to lose all that. That would be dreadful. So I just want to know the pros of keeping the staff. Look, we have all the institutional knowledge, knowing the kids, the stability. The stability is a really important thing. So I just wanted to, probably don't have time for that, but just one last thing. Our average is about 600 students per caseload. Average at Garden Grove is 350, and out of 275, people meet the 350, Fortune 400. And that's them being counselors, they're just guidance specialists. Okay, so thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Tammy Hamill. Good evening. Tammy Hamill, registrar at Ocean View High School. I spoke at the April meeting about district management not supporting classified and gave specific examples about my office that I was in. I wanted to read the email I sent to the board in case you didn't receive it because I have not received any kind of response. This is the email I sent on May 13th. I was going to speak at the meeting tonight, the May meeting, to update you on the electrical safety issues I spoke about at last month's meeting. I have another event to attend for that meeting. Ms. Hernandez, I appreciated that you commented to district management that you'd like to know what the protocol was for handling these kinds of safety issues. So I wanted to let you know that for my situation, their protocol was to move me out of my office. No one came to talk to me or ask what was needed to convert what they call a storage room into an office. Instead, direction was given by Jeff Starr to, quote, move her out. The Monday we returned, I was told by my principal that I was being moved out of my office, and I was moved back into the open guidance area by that Friday. Having an office for the registrar at OV has been an ongoing issue for many years, with the two prior registrars wanting and needing a private office but never getting one. I initially moved into it because I saw the need for it to do my job the best I could, and it was working well, except for the outlet and light switch issue. The outlet issue, I recently found out, even goes against the district policy to use this power strip. But now they've moved me back out into the open area, and I will have the same issues I had before affecting how I can do my job. I can't help but feel that their reaction backs up my comments that classified staff are not supported by district management with some of the basic needs that are required to do our job, and situations get worse if you speak up. My hope is that bringing these issues to your attention will help facilitate positive changes for classified staff being supported with what we need as we continually do our best for students, parents, and our fellow classified staff. That's the end of the email. So district management knew 2 years ago that I was in this office when I sent a request for those issues to speak to them. I clearly didn't think either of those issues was a safety concern until I spoke in public at a board meeting. And this is just one example of many chaotic situations that is created by district management for its classified staff. My question to the board is, do you think this situation was handled correctly? Is this how staff should be treated? Is this how our district should be run? I also have to say, now I wait to see if there are further repercussions or retaliation, which seems like a more fitting word, about me speaking up this time as well. Because this is really how district management works behind the scenes.
Our next speaker is Michaela Wakeman.
I'm Michaela Wakeman from Valley Theater. The last week was pretty rough, unguided. Information that I've not expected for years. You asked for a middle ground credit. Now we just want to be part of that moving forward. How can we all work together and find this out? How can we support our current guidance officers, health care specialists, registrars, pumping effect? Questions out there are real, clear, real, livelihood. Can they buy a house? Buy a car now? What is it? In 6 months, they don't.
Our next speaker is Steve Schultz.
In January of this year, a tumor was found on my spine after getting injured on broken furniture in Marina High School. This tumor is so rare, but I'm the third teacher of Fountain Valley High School to get this exact tumor. The other one was in the classroom next door to me. The teacher who replaced her got two different types of cancers. The teacher who co-taught me in my classroom, my old classroom, 129, had a rare tumor in his nose, and I had nodules in my lungs. Multiple medical professionals have said there's no way this rare tumor could be seen to three employees in that close proximity of that environment causing it. Five different doctors have told me I need major spinal fusion surgery because the tumors in my nerve, I will have permanent nerve damage from my chest and back for the rest of my life, risk of paralysis, and not being able to control when I go to the bathroom or not. I'll let your risk management team know about this and ask for someone from this district to contact me. No one has. It's a common theme in the room tonight. I spoke with my principal and asked him to talk to Carol Ogata to reach out to me. I never heard back. I emailed Paul Lopez again. He said he talked to you and would talk to you again. It's 5 months. I haven't heard from one single one of you. Not even a check-in to say, hey, Steve, are you okay? Do you need anything? Nothing. No communication from any of you. I've seen you all at multiple events. And this goes back to for 10 years, my old classroom had you personally working in a gas chamber, where every day there was what smelled like natural gas spewing out of the HVACs, breathing in. You never actually confirmed what those chemicals were, and for the first 10 years of my life working in this district, I had vertigo, dizzy every single day, still a sleep disorder that I still have to this day. Oh, the teacher next door to me, she has the same sleep disorder. It must just be a coincidence. And once I left that classroom for 10 years of begging to get out, all the dizziness stopped until 2 months ago when there was another gas leak in the boys' locker room, which my portable was right there, and it leaked back in, and I had to leave my board meeting early because I was getting vertigo so badly. Jeff Starr, you callously called those nuisance ailments when you came and met with me years ago. I emailed you multiple times during those 10 years, and usually you wouldn't respond. Same with your directors. Finally, when you hired a company, and he said that these things should never come into HVACs, and he's going to come back many more times to talk to us, and he never came and spoke to us again. One of his employees resigned in protest, and you said in an email that he did resign. You wouldn't say why. You said he wanted to come back to answer our questions, but you couldn't answer my questions either. And you said, I probably have a workman's comp claim, and you sent me information, and you never did, and never heard from me ever again. But you promoted him to deputy superintendent. And I've been trying to reach out last year to Clint Harwick three different times. Carol Lee, you were at one of the breakfasts. He lost my business card, myself, the number three different times. I asked for a meeting to go over all these things, and he completely kept losing my number. Maybe one of you might want to talk to me, because I have way more details and information to back it up of the retaliation that has happened to me and many others, the intimidation, and if you can stop the buzzer for a second, please, that would be respectful. It's a good metaphor how I've been treated for 16 years in this district. But it's just so saddening that my life has been ruined. And I want to ask you one honest question. If this room was filled with gas every time you came here for 10 years, and it was never fixed, and your employees, like Pat Solomon said, are you sure it's not just kids farting? Would they still be employed by them promoted? Think about that. 10 years I was stuck in that room, and you guys did nothing. And I was punished and retaliated, and the principal who did it, you, the director of this district.
Thank you for your comments.
So I'd like for someone to contact me, please, and talk about this. Because it's not just my life, it's the kids' lives, too. We have multiple students who now have tumors and cancers at FDHS who are in my classrooms, too. And when I asked for a portable, you told me it was too expensive. How expensive is spinal surgery? How expensive is being paralyzed? How expensive is not being able to go to the bathroom when you want? Maybe someone will actually return my phone calls and talk about the things that are happening in this district at the highest levels. You know, when our plant manager said that there was a leak, he was transferred to Honey Beach High School. A week later, after contradicting Pat Stellhorn, it's the only guy I know who was transferred in the middle of the school year to another site, prior or since.
Thank you for your comments. Our last speaker is Leah McCauley.
Good evening, board trustees and district officials. April and May were full of weeks of appreciation, and even though it's now June, I wanted to share something about the people with whom I work. Firstly, thank you to trustees Diana Carey and Bonnie Castry specifically for our coffees and meals together over the last 3 years. Engaging in conversation about life and education to build avenues of trust and communication was meaningful work, and I'm glad I was able to do it. Secondly, thank you to Huntington Beach High School RBO representative Zade Maher and Principal Brenna Orr for working together to begin an HBHS RBO open forum process. We've held one meeting so far, and I've heard positive feedback from my colleagues about how Zade structured it and about how Brenna thoughtfully responded to the concerns brought forward. Two of my colleagues said the experience made them, quote, very hopeful about where things are headed next year. Finally, I would like to extend my warm appreciation to the guidance specialists at Huntington Beach High School. This team truly cares about each individual student, and I know that because I am often included on the emails the students send to their guidance specialists in hopes of altering their next year's schedules. Guidance specialists' responses are always timely, and the students are kindly told why things can or cannot happen so as to help them understand. Additionally, all four of them, Carolyn, Maria, Alex, and Chelsea, have personally helped me better understand a student who has some unique situation. For example, this year it was a guidance specialist who told me a student was intermittently experiencing homelessness, which helped me to be the teacher that student needed. And to Martha as well, who coordinated the AP testing on our site so my students could smoothly take their AP tests digitally this year for the first time. These women have important working relationships with the teachers, and it would be unfortunate to see those severed should their position be collapsed without transitioning. Voltaire said appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well.
so that I may be more like them. I celebrate those who are vulnerable in communication, like our trustees, transparent in leadership, like our principal and RVO rep, and compassionate in action, like our guidance specialists. Thank you for your time, and may next year be as dynamic and cool as this past school year.
Thank you. Before I move on with the remainder of the agenda, I just want to clarify with Mr. Hume that you would like to reserve your card until the public hearing. Thank you. Our next item, 3E, is the superintendent's report. Dr. Carolee Ogata will present the report and discuss district activities. Thank you.
Thank you, President Henry. Well, we just about made it. We have two more days of school, and this week we are graduating 3,600 students from our school district. We've seen our athletes win state champions. We've seen our theater programs perform on stage and so many other great things, like the Fountain Valley High School pool being completed. I'd like to extend the warmest congratulations to our students, our parents, and our staff for this school year. I'd also like to thank our retirees. They've spent a lifetime with us. They've been thoughtful. They've been faithful to the school district. And as they sail off into the sunset with their gold card, I hope they continue to join us at our different events. But we do have many retirees this year, and we look forward to seeing them again and thanking them for their years of service. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll move to the business section of the agenda with item 4A, and I'd like to welcome Tracy Green, Chief Business Official, and Jeff Starr, Deputy Superintendent of Business Services, to the podium to present the proposed 25-26 budget prior to the public hearing, which will follow their presentation.
Good evening, President Henry, Board Trustees, Superintendent Ogata, and staff. Thank you for the opportunity for allowing Tracy Green and me to present the May revised and multi-year budget. In all honesty, it's a very quiet budget. We could see a little, very little new money, along with a few hits to educational funding. We also saw the COLA decrease. Governor Newsom released his May budget revision. It illustrates a budget shortfall of $12 billion. In this proposed January budget. Proposition 98 will see a $4.6 billion hit. Governor Newsom did shield education as best as he could, but we will start the year with some of his budget maneuvers.
Let's start with budget maneuvers, specifically that of deferral. Governor Newsom has identified deferring funds that are to be received in June 2026 through July of 2027. He has done this in the past, and we'll be fine with our cash flow. The tax filing extensions for Los Angeles County due to the January 2025 wildfires has delayed revenue collections and complicated budget projections for the state revenues risk. The big three sources of state revenues are personal income, corporation taxes, and sales and use taxes are projected to be lower by $4.8 billion over the three-year budget window when compared to January. Job growth has been downgraded due to weaker labor market conditions and federal policy changes, rising unemployment, inflation, and the slow growth is expected to continue through 2028. Like the rest of the state budget, conditions for Proposition 98 have deteriorated since the governor's proposed budget. Prop 98 minimum guarantee is down $4.6 billion across the three-year budget window. Governor Newsom is funding $2.9 billion of K-12 ongoing programs with one-time funding. And once again, he has depleted the Education Rainy Day Fund of $540 million. When the governor depletes the Prop 98 Rainy Day Fund, he leaves the state vulnerable to a recession.
As you can see by this slide, that the cost of living adjustment, also known as COLA, ranging from 3.29% just a year ago, and at the January proposed budget, 2.92%, followed in the spring estimate at 2.43%, and is currently now at 2.2%, down for a complete percent. We'll see if it remains at 2.3% when the budget gets enacted. FOLA is also proposed at 3.02% for 26-27 year, and for the 27-28 year it is projected to be at 3.43.
Included in this slide is our projected student enrollment, our average daily attendance, also known as ADA, and our prior three-year average in which we are funded on. With the slide, it shows that our student enrollment in ADA continues to project a downward trend or declining enrollment. From 2025 to 2026, we anticipate 495 fewer students as represented by the blue bars. Student enrollment from 2025 to 2026 decreases by 118 students, and with 2026 to 2027 projects an additional decrease of 118 students. This is a total of 731 projected less students over the 3 years. The green bars represent the average daily attendance, or ADA. ADA is the number of students who come to school each day. We average nearly 94% of our students attending school on any given day. Fortunately, we are still able to take advantage of the prior three-year attendance average, or what is known as the attendance yield. This is shown by the gold bars. The three-year attendance average created a softer landing as we decline enrollment at the state. This has been very helpful for our funding. This is what we should receive based on the COLA increase. 24-25 unadjusted base grant was $12,144. An increase of 2.3% COLA for 25-26 is applied to the unadjusted base grant, which is a $279 increase. We also received grade span adjustment of $323 per ADA. This is a $7 increase compared to the 24-25 grade span adjustment of $310. We also received a 20% supplemental grant of $1,378. This brings our total 2025-26 adjusted base grant to $14,124 per ADA.
This slide represents our multi-year budget. Let's first look at what we anticipate our 2025-26 budget to be. The beginning balance is $83.5 million, so this is the projected ending balance from 2024-25. Revenues, as I mentioned earlier, COLA is set at 2.30. This increases our LCFF revenue. Enrollment is projected to decrease by 495 students from the prior year. That brings our revenues to $152 million. Overall expenses are $268 million, includes a 7% increase to health and welfare costs, death and longevity for all employees. PERS remain constant at 19.10%, and PERS is at 26.81%. Fund balances, the revenues less expenditures, it is a negative fund balance of $16 million. This does reflect deficit spending. We are spending the remaining one-time funds on school facility maintenance and HVAC. We have other block grants that are being spent that have assessed timelines, such as Art and Music, AMG, Golden State Pathways, and Educator Effectiveness grants. Ending balance is the beginning balance plus fund balance, also next year's beginning balance of $67.4 million. Components of the ending balance include non-spendables, such as petty cash funds and prepaid expenditures. Restricted balances or reserve funds identified for specific programs and operations is at $6.3 million. Committed balances, one-time funds for HVAC, facility projects, technology, mandate funds, uninsured litigation contingency, and compensated absences combined for a total of $48.3 million. Economic uncertainties at 3% of the expenses is $8 million. Unappropriated amounts, unencumbered one-time funds are at $2.3 million in reserves at 2.85%.
Looking at year two and three of our multi-year budget, multi-year projections are made up of individual budgets based on current assumptions from the May revise. Here are a few items that have the most changes. Revenues, COLA for 2026-27 is projected to be lower at 3.02%. It was projected to be at 3.52% back in January. For 27-28, it is projected to be lower at 4.2% when it was projected to be at 3.63. As mentioned earlier, enrollment is projected to decrease by 118 students in year two and another 118 students in year three. The declining enrollment results in revenues declining compared to 25-26. For expenses, health and welfare, benefits, step and column, longevity, insurance, and other operating costs are accounted for, sir. So our expenses increase in year. Fund balances are negative, so we continue to deficit spend. With that, it is important that we continue our efforts towards matching our staffing to enrollment and explore possible areas of reduction that will have the least impact to our students. The components of the ending balance shows the following. The non-spendable, which is revolving cash and prepaid items, restricted balances, decrease as we continue to spend the categorical one-time grant funds. Committed funds are being used for capital projects and long-term debt. And assigned funds includes the remaining balance due for the vacation liability paydown for CSEA. And as you can see, the reserves meet the 3% state requirement. And this is our multi-year budget.
As required by Orange County Department of Education and the state, this is the legal required language. The days of the huge one-time funds are behind us. It is important that we continue our efforts towards matching our staffing to enrollment and explore possible areas of reduction that once again will have the least impact to our students.
The governor's budget will go through the assembly and the Senate and be signed by June 15th. The budget then goes back to the governor to be signed before June 30th. We most likely will see changes to the budget as it goes through the process. We will be looking at certain bills and the result of trailer bill language, as many of those have expenses tied to them. COLA has fluctuated several times this past year. We will see if it stays at 2.3%. The declining enrollment will also continue to decrease our funding. Negotiations are on calendar for this coming year. We will need to continue to correct our staffing numbers with all groups. We are unsure of the potential economic woes. California is the fourth largest economy in the world. However, it is built on a fragile foundation, having the highest earners. We will see if we will be impacted by any potential federal funds.
Before we close, just a recap of concerns with the state's budget and multi-year projections that, in my view, need to be reiterated, even though you've heard much of it tonight. This will affect the ongoing budget of Lindsay Junior High School District. Again, since January, the state's financial position has weakened. With the May revise, personal income and corporate tax revenue is less by $11 billion for the budget year. Coupled with higher spending, the budget deficit is now estimated to be at $14 billion. The May revision proposes $9.5 billion in spending solutions made up of $4.9 billion in spending reductions, $3.2 billion in fund shifts, and $1.3 billion in funding delays. These tactics are known as budget maneuvers. Looking, and this is what gives me greater concern, looking at the state's multi-year budget, deficits are projected to continue. Operating deficits of $15 billion to $20 billion annually and reaching a deficit of $42 billion by 2028-29. Looking again at Proposition 98, minimum guarantee is $4.6 billion lower than the January governor's budget proposed across years 24-25. The May revision fully funds the cost of living adjustment at 2.30 despite the decrease in funding. In order to cover the drop in the Prop 98 minimum guarantee, the governor proposed utilizing all the Prop 98 reserves and under-appropriate the Prop 98 minimum guarantee by $1.3 billion by delaying the payment to an unspecified year. So what does this really all mean? It means that there'll be less funding and we need to tighten our purse strings in the coming years. We need to right-size staff across all employee groups. Our district must cut spending habits that started with one-time COVID funds, and one-time funds are to be used for one-time services, not ongoing. But with that solemn statement, the 25-26 adopted budget will be presented for approval at the next board meeting on June 24th. I greatly appreciate Superintendent Okada and her support. Tracy Green and Pike Strophy, and who are the masterminds of finance along with the entire business service department, who all work so diligently to help provide this report and safeguard our finances. Thank you.
Thank you for your report. Do board members have questions? Staff?
I do, and I don't know whether you want me to ask them now or wait until we actually deal with the budget.
I think now would be appropriate.
I have a couple of questions.
Give them 2 weeks to, if they don't have
the
answer.
I'll be very easy, because I know he's got on top of it. I noticed that there's a reduction in CTE funds from the, look at this, of about $500,000 projected. And I'm just wondering what, I'm looking at page 14 of the budget. Career Technical Education Incentive Grant Program.
Unrestricted, unrestricted, or just restricted?
This is unrestricted and restricted expenditures. For this school year, it shows $1,718,000, but for the 2025-26 budget next year, it shows that, I'm sorry, shows that it, for this year, it shows that a little over $2 million, and next year, $1.5 million. And I just wondered where the $500,000 reduction, how did that?
For CTE, for CTEG funds, we've
yes.
had some carryover funds, so as we spend a carryover, it doesn't
so
follow to the next year.
So this reflects that.
Yes.
I knew we'd have the answer. My next question is actually on page 16. And I'm looking at the line item for workers' compensation under employee benefits. And I see this year it's $682,000, and next year it jumps to over $2 million. And I know one of the things that Mr. Kerwin has been trying to do is to clean up our claims. And is this a reflection of that?
For workers' compensation, Mr. Cohen's been doing an excellent job actually reducing our liability by half. However, workers' compensation, we've been funding that at a very discounted rate because we had some reserves there. So we were able to spend down our reserves by charging a very discounted rate. And so for the 25-26 school year, our reserves has gone down compared to the last 3 years, so now we need to increase the rate for workers' comp, but it's still at a very discounted rate. We went from 0.5% to 1.5% for workers' comp.
It's like a 200% increase.
It is, and believe it or not, correct, and believe it or not, it's still at a very discounted rate.
I know one of the issues we have dealt with this year are vacation days. For a classified group. But I don't think we've dealt with it yet for certificated. And I'm wondering what our liability is currently for certificated unpaid those vacation days that accumulate. What's our liability?
For certificated, I would have to go back to separate it out for you.
I'm wondering if we have some plans to address this issue because it seems to get bigger and bigger. And
we have been our vacation liability has been going decreasing over the last couple of years. Just as a reminder, certificated staff who are teachers or CPS, they do not receive vacation days.
Well, it's our administration. I understand that. I'm just wondering what our liability is, and because I'm thinking funds are becoming scarcer, and if there are reports tonight, doesn't look great for the next couple of years.
And I just think it's one area that we need to take a look at as a board. And then my last question.
After this, no, we will provide those numbers.
Okay. My last, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but my last question is, if I look at step and column for all employees and health insurance increases, is that my assumption is that's equal to about a 2% increase in our expenditures. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And how much is the COLA we're going to receive next year?
0.3%.
That's what I thought. You sort of wiped it out, didn't
it?
Okay, thank you. Those are my questions.
Any other questions? Trustee Hernandez?
Can you share what percentage of our total general fund expenditures are allocated to salaries and how that compares to some of our other districts or the state?
Yeah, ours is about 88.4% of every $1 goes to salaries and benefits. The state average is about
80%. And then talking about kind of what staffing changes look like in Atlanta, looking at this next year and in the next 2 years, when we get this budget again in 2 weeks, and recognizing the governor is going to approve some form of the budget this month, can we get a timeline on what the staffing provisions look like in terms of what the benchmarks are, at what point in before our interim report, just kind of getting a better global understanding? I know we have a handle next year, but in thinking about what does 2026-27 look like and then 2027-28 look like in order to feel a sense of security with the 3-year projection.
To work on that, we'll work with HR on that. And then
any questions?
Well, I just had a question on the health benefits. You know, is that still a 7% increase, or do we anticipate it being higher? Excuse me.
We do anticipate it being 7%. That's what we have the budget on.
And that's every year. So it's 7% on top.
It's included in our projection.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure it was 7%.
Any other questions?
This one up here on the slide?
Sorry, for having students returning to school and being in their seats. And I ask this because I attended a workshop at the Delegate Assembly where, in fact, some schools are not only having the kinds of people that we are, but also having a student that's been in the classroom or who knows the student or in some way is related, not by blood or something, but related, can relate to that student, to go as well to try and increase. And I know from my wellness committee meetings that, in fact, we are recovering a number of students. Do you have a sense of whether or not we could do anything further in terms of student recovery? Because it seems to be a big area, and we used to have a program, and I assume we probably still do, where we really encourage our staff to keep students in their seats, which was one of the reasons that we hired so many nurses, so that students weren't going home with headache in the morning.
So in starting with the 25-26 school year, there's a new program called the Attendance Recovery Program. So Dr. Felber and I have been listening and getting more information as it rolls out starting in July. And so that will give us an opportunity as a school district capture some of the lost attendance through that program and also look at our Saturday school. Between those programs, and I know it's been an area of focus with our principals or school sites, and so that's definitely an area that we're going to be exploring. exploring and implementing this new school year.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Castry, I like that idea, and I think it's something that we could easily discuss with our principal. Students who know.
We borrow anything we can from anybody who's been working, right? Thank you.
And we do have, on I think, almost every campus peer, a peer tutoring peer group that potentially could be utilized as they go through a vetting process.
I just want to make one more comment. I just want to thank Tracy Green and Jeff Starr for what went into putting this budget. This is a huge document. And you know, I read every single line of it. But it is so well put together, so easy to understand. I think even our average person out there in the community, if they were to sit down with this, could read it and understand it, and I thank you for that.
Tracy does a great job.
It's not an easy task, I know.
One more thing, Trustee Hernandez.
One more thing. And this is something we had talked about, especially with the kitchen upgrade at Huntington Beach High School and Westminster High School, thinking about how we, and you know, Jeremy does a great job of tracking our food waste and just making sure that we're providing the right amount of food, but given kind of where we're shifting efficiency at some of those new models, and especially given how the public is going to feel about the budget and what the sentiment is going to be like over the next 3 years, we're encouraging strategies for sharing how we are doing policy measures outside of the staffing. And so, the example of like the kitchen, you know, reducing food waste, being able to maximize the dollars there, feeding the kids, highlighting that. And I think, Devin, you had shared what John's been able to do with our food expenditure.
He's done a wonderful job with that as he continues to monitor every day. But first of all, just a quick little overview. John and his staff have been very good at reaching out to the students, different cultures, to find out what they like. And then they do test samples at the school sites and what the students like, and they prepare. But what's also what he does every day is they count the meals that they produce, and then they count any leftover, and then they reduce that. So I gave a simple example of what they'll do is, like, let's say, you know, this isn't one that they would do, but I'll make it simple. They'll do peanut butter cookies, and they'll do 600 because that's what they want. And then they'll maybe only 400 to take in. So then the next time, they only do 400, but then they notice that more of the chocolate chip reason. They know they didn't quite get enough peanut butter cookies made, so they'll do a little bit more the next time. That's the detail John goes through with his staff to make sure that we're not wasting. And they're also looking at different ways with point of sales so that we get more throughout different parts of the campus. So he's continuing to do great.
So I think part of my point, too, was the transparency and how we communicate it, because unless you're in this meeting, which is not on Zoom, or you're not reading the minutes, which I'm not used to, being able to understand that information so that people are put at ease or can ask questions outside of the institutions or the Instagram account, being able to share that story, and being able to, like, actually give some numbers in terms of able to do some of this. And so I know that's not an answer today, but more of a practice.
If you know John, he loves social media, he loves to be, so we'll definitely get some of that shared out.
The only comment I had was whether or not you have any, I know we witnessed the governor with the maneuver last year, which CSBA has filed suit against. And another maneuver this year that CSBA has already said they will be filing suit against. The question I have is appropriate to this slide. The fact that we are able to average over the last 3 years, which is the yellow bar, is there any indication that that will be ongoing, that we will be able to take care of that? Because as we move forward, if we have to rely on last year or the previous year, which are the other two choices, and we choose to do the average, is there any indication that that will be ongoing or there's going to be an end to that? Because we can't really get a straight answer.
My understanding is that it's ongoing.
It's ongoing, okay. Well, as long as they give
change that.
Well, yeah.
So my argument, or I guess for advocacy's sake, my argument would be we should get 3 years before they change that, because we are averaging 3 years. So that will be how we lobby if and when they do that to us, because I'm sure they'll figure that out soon, but that's not. I know it's helping us with a softer landing for declining enrollment, but given the maneuvers the governor has done, I wouldn't be surprised if we got the rug pulled out from under us on that. And I think we just need to be wary and fight for at least a 3-year transition, because this is the only thing that is really going to help us. Thank you very much for your report, very comprehensive. At this time, I will open the public hearing. This is a public hearing for the 25-26 proposed budget, and at this time, Mr. Hume had requested to speak, so the microphone is yours, sir.
Good evening, Hanging Beach Union High School District board members and community. We've been talking so solemnly. It sounds like a really serious thing, but the best news is actually what Mr. Starr started with, that this is a pretty boring budget. As bad as the news is, it's not worse. So thank you for that. I'm actually here tonight with two purposes. I want to speak to our district's strong financial position during these uncertain state budget times, and also to say goodbye to someone who's been my worthy adversary and my respected colleague. Our district finds itself in an enviable position as we face this economic uncertainty. While other districts scramble, we have the reserves and the financial stability to weather the budget challenges ahead of us. This didn't happen by accident. It's the result of long-term, disciplined financial stewardship. As we consider tonight's budget, or as you consider tonight's budget proposal, we can move forward with the confidence that comes from years of careful planning. This budget proposal reflects the realities we face while maintaining our commitment to these. Which brings me to Mr. Starr, our retiring Assistant Superintendent of Business Services. Now, I should probably disclose my bias here. As the union president and as the former bargaining chair, Jeff's job has essentially been to tell me no for the better part of a decade, and he's been remarkably good at it. The financial foundation Mr. Starr helped build is evident in the budget presented to you tonight. It positions us to make thoughtful decisions rather than desperate ones. I first met Jeff when we were both new to our roles, him as the district's new financial guardian, me as the union's new bargaining chair, and we immediately found ourselves on opposite sides of an agreement that was made before either of us was in those roles. But what struck me then, and has remained true throughout our professional relationship, is Jeff's unwavering professionalism. We could spend time at the bargaining table in disagreement about every line item in the budget, and after all, that was his job, to protect the district finances from people like me, who want to spend money on radical ideas like competitive teacher salaries or classroom resources or the backbone of our schools, our classified staff. But here's what I've always respected about Jeff. The moment we stepped away from that table, the disagreement stayed behind. He never took our professional disputes personally. He could argue against my proposals with the tenacity of someone protecting taxpayer dollars and then 5 minutes later ask me about my family or share a laugh about the absurdities of public education finance. Jeff understood something crucial. We weren't enemies. We were both doing our jobs. His job was to say no to my requests for more money. My job was to ask anyways, usually with a straight face. It was a professional dance that we both knew well, and he performed his part with integrity and good humor. So, Jeff, as you head into retirement, know that you've done your job exceptionally well. You've protected our district's financial future, even from well-meaning union presidents who thought every budget surplus was just a teacher raise being wasted. Our disagreements were never personal, but my respect for your professionalism and dedication has always been genuine. Thank you for your service to our district and our community. Enjoy your retirement. You've earned it. And frankly, after years of saying no to me, you deserve some time when hopefully nobody is going to ask you for money.
Thank you. Any other members of the public who wish to come forward for this public hearing to comment on the budget? Seeing none, I close the public hearing for the 25-26 proposed budget. Our next item on the agenda is educational service, and we will have a staff. staff presentation from Dr. Amy Tomamatsu, Director of Data Research and Categoricals, on our local control and accountability plan. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Board of Trustees, Dr. Agata, staff, and guests. My name is Amy Tomamatsu, and I thank you for the opportunity tonight to speak with you about our local control and accountability plan, also known as the LCAP. Sorry, that was me trying to screw it in a little bit more. So let's start with our mission statement and our instructional focus that we plan to use as the foundation of our work moving forward in 25-26 school year. For our students to be inspired to change the world, we believe we need to be intentional in our work as we consider the curriculum, instruction, assessment, and climate that we design for our students. And for our students to be college and career ready, we need them to learn the skills that will transfer into their post-secondary endeavors. And so throughout the development of our LCAP, we worked with many educational partners who provided us with outstanding input. Our educational partners include parents, students, and staff, including teachers, nurses, guidance staff, classified members, representatives from our local bargaining units, district office, school site administrators, as well as board members. Each partner group provides input from their unique lens, which helps to ensure that our plan is representative of our entire school community. In addition to the LCAP community and the broader LCAP survey, which provides all parents, students, and staff an opportunity to provide input, the discussions that we have with various groups also provide district leadership with insights that guide the district's work and development of the LCAP. This year represents year two of our three-year cycle of the LCAP. This allows us the opportunity to refine our actions and deepen our work as we contribute toward, as we continue on the path towards meeting our year three targets. Overall, you'll notice that the bulk of our action titles and metrics are the same as prior year, and we just want to refine that work as we move into year two. Here's a quick overview representing the structure and content of our district LCAP. A couple things I'll point out. We did add one additional action in Goal 3, moving it to 7 total actions to support the tracking of academic climate initiatives. And there were also 2 additional actions added to Goal 4 for Valley Vista High School. This goes throughout the presentation. Our 25-26 LCAP has a total of 4 goals, 32 actions, 56 metrics. And each of our LCAP goals is associated with metrics that help us to measure progress. Many of these metrics are based on the 23-24 school year outcomes, and many of those were also presented to the board during the mid-year update report to the board in January, I recall. I will present each goal tonight with highlights from implementation, successes from the 23-24 outcomes, and continued areas of growth. And throughout the presentation, I've tried to highlight key themes that we've heard from discussions with our educational partners. Goal 1 represents the core systems that ensure positive student outcomes. In other words, it contains actions that are largely centralized services. When we've reflected on our successes, we continue to hold pride in our state's test scores and the rates that exceed state and county. The table on this slide provides the percent of students who met and exceeded standards in English language arts, mathematics, and science. And that would be with a score of a 3 or 4 met or exceed standards. Since we're a high school district, we've put the comparison of our county and state also high school test takers, so 11th grade for ELA math and high school testers for the science. While we're about 5 percentage points above the Orange County rates, you'll also notice that we are more than 10% above the state's rate. The second bullet that we wanted to highlight as a success are our upward trending A-G rates. We can see here that we've increased our rate 6.3% over the last 5 years. We have refined our guidelines this year for schools that we believe will result in even more growth in this metric for the class of 2025. And And one other success worth noting here, when we reviewed the data of our students who were just on the cusp of meeting 830, just those who are maybe 5 credits or fewer away from meeting it, or also students who are just maybe 1 subject area away from meeting full 830 subject requirements, we noticed that we have improved that rate of deficiency. So we call that the 830 deficiency metric, and we've also improved in that area. And so we would like to continue to see this growth and to ensure that all our students have a chance to get back on track, stay on track, and meet APUG. Student feedback around this area calls for timely, frequent, and accurate advisement, which is necessary to ensure that they have every option to pursue their desired path to college and career. Goal 1, areas for growth. The first is connected to one of our strengths on the previous slide. So in terms of state test scores, we have historically maintained rates higher than the state and county, as I just stated. But as you can see here, the state and county are closing the gap. While our district has declined about 6% since the 2019 pre-pandemic test year, the state and county decline has been 1% ELA and about 3% on that. We want to make sure that we can maintain our lead here in Huntington Beach. Another area for growth that was identified by many of our educational partners during our committee state review session was the lower performance that's observed for specific student groups such as our English learners and students with disabilities. And so there was a lot of conversation about the special programs that we have for our students who have IEPs. Another area of growth is our graduation rate. While we historically had excelled in this area with rates higher than the state and county, 2024 was the first year we dipped below the county rate. You can see that on the far right. We have implemented new processes to review exit codes, which I think that if I could foresee into the future, I anticipate that our graduation rate will be in the area of success once again. But we've always been very proud of our graduation. We do continue to maintain that we have a high graduation. To build on our strengths and to address our areas of growth, the district is renewing our focus on strong instructional practices based on the standards and skills necessary for students to become college and career ready, to be future ready. We'll invest in a multi-year professional development and support plan, and we'll also be providing guidance to schools around progress monitoring rooted in our processes designed by our MTSS team. And those two are very key areas within Goal 1. HBUHSD will continue to maintain the 10 actions in Goal 1 for the second year of this three-year LCAP cycle. And some of the highlights identified by our educational partners, which are strengths that we would like to see us continue to build upon, are professional development, and you see all the various areas that are some of our key initiatives in that first bullet. Assessments, especially around testing practices, educational technology. We want to work on coordinating and linking our professional development activities under the framework of student ownership and build a common vision across our district for instruction, curriculum, assessment, and climate. And that would be a key part of our multi-year plan for improving student outcomes with the aim of ensuring that students leave our district ready. So these 10 actions together will serve to address identified needs and help to contribute to our existence. Goal 2 represents school-based programs and services for all students to improve achievement and outcomes for every learner. And so this first success, I think, is a really big one, Advanced Placement, or AP. These are courses designed to prepare students for college-level coursework. And the exam that students take in May have potential to offer college credits for qualifying scores of a 3, 4, or 5. Our students do quite well on AP exams with a 79.1 pass rate in 2024. And you can see how that compares to the state and global rates. And I was looking back at some prior year rates because I was like, that's really high. I wonder, what does that look like in terms of trends? Prior year pass rates, 75%, 72%, 75%, We've had rates above 70% since 2020, minus the COVID testing year in 2021, which was 68%, which in my opinion just speaks to the fact that our in-person teaching really does have an impact on how well our students do. So that's the AP test score. Earlier we also looked at the decline in our state test scores, but I wanted to highlight one of the groups that has been demonstrating growth, or has done quite well from 23 to 24. So while the percent of students with disabilities meeting and exceeding standards remains relatively low, we know that the method of reporting using the four performance levels of not met, barely met, met, and exceeded, which is how we commonly do report test scores, percentage of students who met and exceed standards. For students with disabilities, that rate is not as high as you might expect to see in some other student groups. But individual students also receive a scale score, which ranges from about 2,300 to 2,900. And so for purposes of accountability, especially on the California dashboard, the state uses that scale score method for calculating achievement by describing it as a distance from standard net. So if standard net is 2,500 and a student scores 2,400, they would say they were 100 points below standard net. That is the distance from standard, or DFS, method calculating for accountability purposes. All that to say, our students with disabilities, by that method, saw that they performed closer to standard net in 2024, up 8.1 points in ELA and 16.4 points in math. And so while the district saw a slight decline, our students with disabilities saw that increase, so we thought that was very positive. The third success on the slide is our reclassification rate. The senior who ended up meeting the criteria to be reclassified as fluent English proficient. We had 19.3% reclassified and in 2024, and that's actually the highest rate we've seen in the past 5 years. So we thought that was another success of noting here. Areas for growth. While in the previous slide we had a strength with the reclassification of our English learners, one area of growth would be the growth that we have with our existing English learners. EL progress was down 10.2% on the 2024 dashboard, and that was a decline from the prior year that caused the identification of red performance level on the 2024 dashboard. And just for context, set goals for ourselves. We know that a growth of 0 to 1.9% would bring us to orange, 2% would take us to yellow, and a growth of 5.4% in this green would bring us back to green. So this is where we're at for EL progress. Another area we have for growth is related to college and career metrics. A through G, on the previous slide, we're on an upward trend. We like to keep seeing that keep seeing improvement there. But A through G is not the only metric, college and career readiness metric. It's one key indicator because the sequence of courses represents those that are vital for both academic and professional pursuits, regardless of whether students decide to enroll in college after high school. But it does help to keep that potential open. But there are the college career indicator on the dashboard as other metrics in which ways that students can show that they are prepared. HBUHSD earned a yellow performance level with 54.4% of our graduates meeting criteria for prepared. So we believe we have some work to do to continue to help our students meet those criteria. And that is work in areas such as CTE, college and college credit courses that we offer, state test scores, skill by literacy, APID. All those metrics combined, there's multiple methods for being able to show those students prepared for college and career. Last bullet here on the slide, college enrollment data. We're looking at the total percentage of graduates enrolling after high school in a two-year college, either for certificate or associate, or into a four-year university. The rate last for the class of 2024 was 77%. If we look at the rates of students attending post-secondary schools within the past 8 years, the highest rate we ever had was 81% in 2018. And so this is one area that we continue to closely monitor, connected to the work that we do for college and career readiness. In goal two, we will maintain our compassion once again, which represents these school-based programs and services, as well as our supports for high-end students. Goal two, to address our need for English learners, the district continues to invest in our partnership with ELG, that's our first highlight. We are building the capacity of our administrators to lead that work, as well as teacher leaders. We have three teachers that are committed this year to attend, to participate in the apprenticeship, which will allow them to become certified presenters through ELG to deliver the initial training to teachers, as well as four additional teachers who've committed to attending a leadership seminar to support the work of teacher leaders on their own campus. We're trying to build a cadre of that next level experts at each of our school sites. For Unified Sports, they've developed a calendar with at least one event per month, and Unified Co-Teaching provides students with disabilities opportunities to participate in academics that they might not otherwise be able to. And on-campus dual enrollment offerings have grown from 7 sections just 2 years ago to 45 sections in 24-25, providing broader access to college credit opportunities for all students. And 4 new CTE pathways started this year, all of these being great opportunities that we make available to all our students to explore future career paths. And this is kind of the highlight of goal two. Next is goal three, which is our wellness goal. A review of successes here. Many of our metrics are tied in goal three to our annual LCAP survey, which I've mentioned a couple times. So that one is really going to help us to measure our perceptions, especially around wellness, connectedness, climate. And we saw our student participation really skyrocket this year. So our schools did an excellent job really promoting that survey and helping us to increase that with total participation. Almost 50% of the total student enrollment participated in the survey this year. And as you know, more participation, reliability, representativeness, and greater validity to the conclusions that we can make from that data. So with the increase in student participation, we also saw this reliable data, right? More participation. We saw increases in positive ratings around student safety, school connectedness, and we know our schools are working hard on that every year. Other student outcome metrics that we saw improvements to in goal three that were not survey related, chronic absenteeism and expulsion rates were down. For both of those metrics, it's been the lowest, we saw the lowest rates of chronic absenteeism and expulsion within the last 3 years. Goal three, areas of growth. So our wellness goal includes maintaining a climate conducive for learning. And educational partners frequently emphasize the need to maintain clean and well-maintained schools and the need to consider environments that facilitate 21st century teaching and learning. We want to make sure our schools are really up to speed with everything they need to move forward. This language has been added to Action 3.6 to affirm that we value that. Attendance, this came up, I think, in the budget presentation as well. Attendance rates have an impact, as we know, on academic outcomes and student engagement. And educational partners and district leadership have all agreed that we have a need for additional focus and attention on improving attendance. Average daily attendance, ADA, has an impact on district funding, staffing, and program availability, which will be further monitored to maximize resources. The work that we do around attendance recovery, our mental health specialist teams, and other staff who help to identify and address student family needs to make sure our students can get back in school and stay in school are vital to this effort. Those systems that we have in place will continually be reviewed for effectiveness and refined as a new focus. We've been starting to have these discussions in admin meetings, so we try and continue to highlight the work that we're doing around improving attendance. We also receive feedback about tutoring, which is connected to progress monitoring and knowing the options for how, when, and where students can get assistance. Feedback from groups paths for communication and outreach to be strengthened so that students and families know about the available resources, and it asked us to consider novel ways to reach a hard-to-reach audience. So while we have the opportunities that exist, how do we make sure that we can spread that word? Goal 3, action. So here we did add that new action, 3.7, act on climate, which is the goal at the bottom. Goal 3 aims to provide a climate conducive to learning, and the existing actions that connect to student climate include wellness, safety, engagement, particularly through extracurricular and co-curricular activities, student voice, which was added new last year. So while climate's embedded within many of these areas, we felt that Action 3.7 would provide an action that focuses specifically on conditions that foster a positive academic climate within the classroom and throughout. As the district can build a common vision around that framework, we thought that it would be helpful to add this action so that we can capture the work that we're doing on this area, especially and these expenditures as work evolves. And other highlights from the year that we intend to build upon, listed here, continued investments in our well-being initiatives, growth of our DLAC and strong parent and family engagement efforts at our schools, and the ongoing work that is done by our maintenance operations teams. We have arrived at goal 4. This is our equity multiplier goal specific to Valley Vista High School, and just as a refresher, the equity multiplier is an additional funding source. It's not LCFF. It's a separate funding source allocated specifically to school sites with a prior year non-stability rate of 25% and a socioeconomically disadvantaged people rate above 70%. So this is how schools around the state are eligible for equity multiplier. If you're a district with a school that has equity multiplier fund, then beginning with the 24-25 LCAP, you've been required to create a goal specifically for that school to describe what we plan to intend for funding. So goal 4 is specific to Valley Vista High School for that reason, having equity multipliers. Valley Vista High School continues to provide programs and services to support the needs of the student population, providing them with opportunities to meet graduation requirements and address other wellness needs. We kind of stated that those are some of their highest needs. While graduation rates, state test scores, and attendance rates remain identified needs, we continue to see successes in perception data from the students as measured by the annual LCAP survey. Again, almost half the students at Valley Vista participated in the survey in this past year, and from that data, some of the highest rates of feeling supported for their academic success across the district, 99% of the students at Valley Vista believe that they feel supported, and 95% believe that they have provided the tutoring and intervention to support their student success. Really high rates for continuation high school. The equity multiplier goal will continue to provide additional layers of support that they would otherwise maybe not have the resources for. This also includes Action 4.1, a student support system special assignment, as well as various agencies and staffing that provide services for social, emotional, behavioral, and academic support. We did talk about adding a couple new metrics in Goal 4 that you may have noticed from you, and those are around chronic absenteeism, as we continue to monitor and look at absenteeism as a key factor in student outcome, as well as teacher credentialing, which is something that's required as part of school. So next step, the LCAP is a lengthy document, and it provides far more detail than I could present here today. But on behalf of the district, we appreciate the board's representation on the LCAP committee, and your participation, the ongoing guidance around the district's work. We thank you for your review of the LCAP itself, and I want to invite all educational partners to share with me any questions that you might have through this period between today and the time that our LCAP is brought back to the board for final adoption, so that we can take those into consideration as we finalize the LCAP for the June 24th meeting. Once the final LCAP is adopted by the board at the June 24th meeting, we submit it to the Orange County Department of Education for final review and approval. The county office
I can tell you, has pre-reviewed our plan. We like to submit it to the advance, so we have no surprises. And they have assured us it meets all the legal requirements. We're just doing the refinements at this point. And then once our LCAP is approved, it will be posted to the district website. That's typically happens during the summer months. And we also post in Spanish and Vietnamese once the translations are completed. And then during the 25-26 school year, the development cycle for the 26-27 LCAP will begin all over again. And we will be in year three of our three-year cycle next year when we're developing. So in closing, I want to publicly thank all the educational partners involved in the process of developing the LCAP, the LCAP committee, students, parents, and teachers and staff, many who give up their time after work, after school to participate in that. All our survey takers, we had, like I said, more than ever, student survey takers, our leadership team and cabinet, all the various meetings and discussions, all the staff who support the development of the LCAP, all those who contribute to this process, and of course to the school board for your leadership, guidance, encouragement, and support. Your direction and guidance is critical to our work. And I can take questions, and if needed, I'm happy to provide a follow-up on anything I might not be able to answer today, but I gave that as a disclaimer. That's okay.
I'll write it down. It's got a two-week shelf life.
Yes, it has a two-week shelf life.
So, trustees, any questions for Dr. Tomomatsu? Thank you so much for your report.
Thank you.
Trustee Hernandez?
On the goal one, in looking at the whole document, our SAT tests are kind of like a moment in time assessment, especially because we only have the 11th graders. So if we're looking at the low math test scores, for example, what other data are you looking or are we looking at in terms of student success in math? Because I'm thinking what math classes they're taking, do they graduate with an Algebra 2? Something like that. Like, are there other things that we're putting into that narrative?
I know that we do look at grades, so course grades. We do look at student course-taking patterns. We do have the 8th grade math placement test. We do know our teachers do assessments. There's nothing, like, if you're asking about formative, centralized district benchmarks, we don't have anything like that, but we're looking more at like grades and grades and courses. That's what we do in our instruction curriculum. Is there anything they'd like to add? That's what I know that we're looking at right now.
Just trying to understand how else we know about the math, because I think that's the downside of just that test is that it tells us one thing.
Correct.
Okay. And then on one of the goals, how are we defining student voice?
How are we defining student voice? The students are able to participate in what they find is, they have to participate in how to create the school climate and pride. I don't know if I can articulate this very well right now.
We get that all the time too. So it's getting an understanding.
So, right. Because I'm trying to think about how it is that the students, when they wanted me to add student voice, how they defined it. And so I'd have to, on the spot, I can't think of a good answer. But
right.
But, yeah, definitely, like, they wanted to make sure that their voice was valued in what it is that the school does in general. So let me come up with something a little bit more articulate for you.
And then just understanding with our graduation rates, you know, when a semester is happening this week, when would we know our graduation rate for class of 2025?
A couple weeks after, once grades are posted. Yes. We do have a window of time in which seniors who maybe didn't meet all the graduation requirements and make up coursework to still be counted as part of the cohort. So there's like we submit a file of grads, but then we have until I think is it August? Somebody in the room right now. We have till August 15th to finalize that file. Mm-hmm. Then we might see a slight
support after that point. I do know, having done Coast and Valley Vista, there are kids completing their coursework that morning. So them all the way up to the deadline. So I don't anticipate, and then of course we have done some summer offerings where we do a fall graduation that I believe still fall. I think the rate still is reflected in the previous year. So yeah, it's not the day of graduation, and so there will be some give and take, but it's not a lot. It's not a lot of flux, a lot of change.
And can you share, so Remy, what was the, I know you had a really high survey return rate with the students. What was the parent and community survey?
The parent survey, I didn't list as a strength because those numbers actually went down this year. I think it was a little under 1,000. And then the staff survey actually was pretty good. It was like 865 or something. The numbers stuck in my head, but I definitely have those numbers. So I can
thank you. Yeah, I just want, you did an absolutely wonderful job at making a summary out of this huge report, so thank you for that. And I also wanted to thank Dr. Murray, because you did such a thorough job on giving an LCAP the committee summaries, and it's just really great to know that, you know, everybody is on the same page and we all have, you know, the same goal. And I just wanted to know, I was really impressed by the facilitator, accomplishments and the overall outcomes. I did have one question on that, and the facilitators, were very appreciative of their opportunities for reflection. But regarding the math part, I know on goal one for effective instruction, there were teachers that wanted to do the derivative math program. And so we had a lot of teachers that signed up to do that so that we could evaluate that to see if that was even a benefit to us, all of our classes. And we didn't get enough of those teachers that signed up. We had to just completely abandon that because they didn't do the follow through that was necessary to evaluate that program. And so that was not good. So I thought for next year, when we're looking to the facilitators, if we are looking at an improvement for instruction and the teachers sign up to do that, we have to have some way to track that, because otherwise that's really a waste of resources for, the people that do. And my other comment relates again to this time to goal one, and looking at the A through G subject requirements, and this year for our seniors at Westminster High School, Dr. Sable said that we had 89% of our seniors completed their A. Now I realize that we only looked at this group 23-24 for A through G, but I really think that for the committee next year, they really need to take a look at what's happening at Westminster to have such a high completion rate for their A through G requirements. And that sums up my comments.
Any other comments?
Thank you very much for all of the work that went into it, as well as facilitators who actually facilitated our small group discussions with staff, and then the note-taking. You two have compiled the report that you took the note-taking center really fabulous.
We have a good system. And we had all those little mini presentations by us this year, which was new addition, so people really enjoyed that. To learn a little deeper about different specific topics that they're interested in.
Oh, those were really great process.
Hearing no further questions, thank you so much for your comprehensive report. The next item is our public hearing, and I need to read this portion. Enacted in 2013, the local control funding formula is California's school funding system. As part of LCFF, the legislature included an accountability component known as the Local Control and Accountability Plan. The LCAP is designed to provide school districts and their communities with more local control and describes the goals, actions, services, and expenditures to support positive student outcomes. Each school district in developing its LCAP must address 8 state priorities and solicit input and consult with parents, teachers, school administrators, school employees, students, and employee organizations. As part of the process, each school district is required to hold a public hearing to solicit the recommendations and comments of the members of the public regarding the specific actions and expenditures proposed to be included in the LCAP. So I will open the public hearing. Any members of the public wishing to address the presentation this evening of the Local Control and Accountability Plan may approach the microphone. Seeing none, I will close the public hearing. And thank you for your attention to this LCAP report. And we will have our final votes at the meeting in 2 weeks. Next item under Educational Services is an action item, and approval is recommended to submit an application for the 2025 Golden Bell Award for the Giving Farm at Westminster High School. Thank you to our speaker for outlining that ahead of time. And so, Trustee Dishno, and a second by Trustee Castry. Any comments or questions? Trustee Hernandez?
Are there, just for clarification, are there any financial, anything you have to spend in order to apply?
No.
It's
a CSBA award.
No.
And there's no charge.
You don't spend it.
Not to apply. Not to apply. Trustee Dishno?
I would just comment that it's about time we submitted these applications for these awards, because both programs are absolutely outstanding, the best that I have seen. So I have my fingers crossed that the recognition that they deserve will be forthcoming.
Well, and I can comment that we did propose, we put forward the Giving Farm last year. However, there was another farm in Orange County that was put forward, and it was a K-8 district, and, you know, they're cuter than our kids. Oh, sorry.
not.
Well, now we know why we didn't get it, Susan. That's my suspicion, but I feel that this year we will certainly, but I do, the reason I interrupted was, I will say there, in the event that we win, which I feel confident that we will, we do want people to go to conference from Westminster, so there may be cost incurred for travel, because it is in Sacramento this December. So, any other questions or comments before we have the vote? No? Seeing none. So I already mentioned who our motion maker was and the second, so please vote. Ayes. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is the consent calendar with addendum. We do have a addition for a field trip. It should be at your places. And so I will address that we have a motion by Trustee Castry with addendum and a second by Trustee Carey. Any member of the board wishes to remove for separate consideration?
Which is the addition?
It's field.
All of these are additions.
I think just a moment.
Thank you.
Anyone else need any more time to review? All right, then I will
vote. 5 ayes, unanimous for the consent calendar. Thank you very much. And we will move to item 6-0, which is our board policy that you have the backup on. Board policy 6143, instruction courses of study. This is the first reading in the continued revision of existing policies and administrative regulations. We will entertain a motion. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought that was under separate consideration. In the past, I feel like we've done board policy. Thanks, Carol. Yeah. So that was for the first reading. I'll come back in 2 weeks. I apologize. So item 7, new business. I'll start with Trustee Castry.
Okay. Thank you.
Surprise.
Well, yeah, because you usually start at the other end, but anyway, that's okay. I had just written down, I had a question regarding the theater, because, in fact, I spoke with the principal and also the superintendent regarding that. So if somebody could get back to us about what's really happening there, because I thought that there was going to be one class. I recognized that there weren't going to be two because there weren't enough students to handle two.
You are correct. Right, but we will write a report on that. But yes, there will be a class.
There's one class?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Apparently the word's not getting out there, so thank you. Thank you.
So all of the information that we heard this evening from students about the program being canceled is not accurate.
Yes, not accurate.
That was my understanding, that it was not really canceled program.
We're not canceling the program, it will be maintained, and they will.
How do we get that information to students? Because obviously they have a misunderstanding.
The Paula, Principal Lopez, has talked to the students, is sending out a letter to parents at Parent Square to communicate that we will continue on with the program, continue on with performances as we have done. It may not be Mr. Zick, it'll probably be a different teacher.
The program is in place.
That's right.
But it's just one class period because we only, I don't want to go too far, but there were only 28 students in two classes, if I understand that. And we can't afford to do classes of 14 students. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
We are. We're looking at a number of different avenues to make sure that we can maintain a performing arts program at Fountain Valley.
Fountain Valley. I think one of the common things I heard is a small group space, so regardless of whether or not it was theater, especially at a school like Fountain Valley where you have a higher enrollment, and so getting more information about, you know, where do students go when they don't want to be part of a big group, but they're having that support system in place. And so getting some understanding on that after, especially what the strategy looks like at our larger schools, so that students don't feel like they're, and then if I can get some information. So I've gotten some feedback from hearing from students and then even documented and citizen staff who were scared to go to work today because they don't know what's going to happen next, and I have that same fear. What information is being communicated to our students, and then especially I think my concern is with what's going on, and especially the uncertainty that it's the last week of school, and so what happens for our students when they don't know where to go next week, and then especially because I know what we've heard in the past is kind of the feedback that we've gotten from the principals and who's asked for help, but recognizing, especially in this moment, that we may have students who are not going to want to identify themselves, and looking at what some of the other districts are doing to share that information so that they don't have to ask themselves. And not necessarily being undocumented, but I think for a lot of students I've spoken to this semester, coming from a mixed status family, worrying about it and being especially with enrollment and with our student wellness over the summer, if their primary breadwinner does not come home, what are the safety net measures that they have access to? I know we don't provide everything, but what are we doing to ensure that they are whole come August? So more information on that, especially what gets communicated to the students and the families, so then we know that we don't have the same access to something like Parent Square.
Mine is more of a request under new business regarding the employee that spoke in public comments and conveying HIPAA regulations and the fact that it was a very impassioned public comment. However, the board, at least myself, was not aware of anything. I mean, there are HIPAA regulations, and so although he may have reached out to the administration, you in turn did not violate HIPAA by reaching out to the board. So whatever you need to do as far as that's regarding, that is a very fine line to be walking in a public meeting. So I have concerns about, I'm not going to gavel down somebody who's expressing their public opinion, but when you venture into legality regarding personnel's medical condition, new business.
No, thank you.
Dr. Murray.
No, thank you.
Brian.
Thank you.
Mr. Starr, other than we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Maybe in 2 weeks, but no new business.
So we are adjourned for this evening, and the next meeting will be at 6 p.m. on June 24th here in the district office. Thank you for attending.